Southerners and Republicans, the Great Reversal. Back in 1860, who could have guessed? Very few Southerners that year ever got a chance to vote for or against Abraham Lincoln and the Republican Party. In the 11 states that shortly raised the Confederate flag, the nominee and his party, quite often equally despised, were simply not on the ballot. These states, for the most part, featured three-way races between the Southern Democratic contender, John Breckinridge of Kentucky, the Northern Democratic nominee, Stephen Douglas of Illinois, and the Constitutional Union choice, John Bell of Tennessee. The South Carolina legislature, uncommitted to any popular participation in choosing presidents, picked state Breckinridge electors itself. Missouri, Kentucky, and Maryland were scarcely less dismissive of Lincoln and the GOP. This makes the turnabout of the last century and a half so stark. The Republican presidential nominee took all 11 ex-Confederate states in both 2000 and 2004. Under George W. Bush, the rural and small-town Greater South became what GOP leaders reverently called the base. Party politics in the major Western nations offers no parallel to this great reversal. It is understandable only in light of one phenomenon: the transfer, over five decades, of deep-seated fealty to Southern folkways and sectionalism from the Democrats to the Republicans. So what psychology reversed? How and why? When post-war Reconstruction took the form of military rule in 1867, the Republican Party, having no prior electoral relationship to the ex-Confederate states, established one with the working end of a bayonet. Former slaves would be enfranchised, and biracial coalitions orchestrated by Northern advisors and expanded by white Southern Unionists, carpetbaggers and scalawags in the lexicon of white ex-Confederates, would elect Republicans to state and national office. In the end, that political Reconstruction fared little better than the parallel Northern bid to reconstruct Southern religion. The Democratic Party's defense of Southern white society would win it nearly a century of regional gratitude and fidelity. After a congressional commission gave Republicans the electoral votes of three disputed Southern states in 1876's stalemated presidential contest, no state in Dixie supported another GOP presidential nominee until 1920, when semi-isolationist Tennessee voted Republican largely to protest Woodrow Wilson's war policies and involvement in Europe. Then 1928 saw Southern Protestant objections to the Catholicism of the Democratic nominee, New York Governor Alfred E. Smith, produce Republican successes in Tennessee, Florida, and Texas. No other victory would follow until Dwight Eisenhower's breakthrough in 1952. Aroused by hostility to Franklin D. Roosevelt and the New Deal, upper-income whites from Houston to Palm Beach and the Virginia Hunt Country had started voting Republican for president by 1940. But while this had significance in parts of the Outer South, it counted little in states such as Alabama, Arkansas, and Mississippi, where truly upper-income whites could be outvoted by a half-dozen fair-sized Baptist churches. Racial tensions broke away more voters in the late 1940s and 1950s. In 1952, Eisenhower carried three Southern states, followed by five in 1956. Richard Nixon took three in 1960. Then conservative strategists let their ambitions below the Mason-Dixon line get out of hand. In 1964, by opposing civil rights legislation, Barry Goldwater carried the five states of the Deep South, but lost in the Outer South, and almost everywhere else. This electoral miscarriage inhibited future Republican strategies, demanding greater wisdom. After 1968, when Richard Nixon, making his second presidential bid, carried five Southern states, Republicans held the White House for 20 years out of the next 24. The GOP enforced basic civil rights laws, but emerged as the party willing to appoint Dixie conservatives to executive and judicial positions and to oppose unpopular desegregation remedies, such as the busing of pupils to promote racial balance. In January 1972, Alabama Governor George Wallace's third-party candidacy, strong enough in segregationist sentiment and populist rhetoric in 1968 to garner electoral votes in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas, slipped into the past tense when he decided to run only in that year's Democratic presidential primaries. This played havoc in North and South alike. Northern Democrats, firmly in control of the party's 1972 delegate selection and nomination processes, responded to grassroots disarray by shifting leftward to nominate South Dakota Senator George McGovern. But even before that selection, the Washington rumor mill hummed with a related possibility. Just as the Republicans newly arrived in the Capitol in 1861 had been unable to control Congress until its Southern Democrats went home to put on Confederate gray, breakthrough in 1972 required another big fix, some kind of new double harness. Southern politicians interested in an overt alliance included ex-Governor John Connally of Texas, Senator Harry Byrd of Virginia, Mississippi Senator James Eastland, and Congressman Joe Wagoner of Louisiana, leader of the Southern conservative bloc in the House. National GOP strategists devoutly hoped, and national Democrats mightily feared, that under the right circumstances, the conservative Democratic Southern officeholders and influence mongers of congressional Washington would join up. Electoral momentum hurtled the South toward presidential Republicanism, which Dixie Democrats well understood. After World War II, the slow emergence of the Second Reconstruction of the South, in this instance implemented by federal courts and U.S. Marshals, covered that same tense quarter century. Historians using that term included C. Van Woodward, Eric Foner, Dan T. Carter, Manning Marable, and Richard Vallely.